There's no free lunch when it comes to investing. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to the Free Lunch Podcast, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. Greg, here we are.
Here we are.
I've said that many times during our recordings.
Almost every time.
Yeah. Tous les jours, exactly. The French would say, right?
Yeah.
But today, what are we talking about? We're talking about things that are, I guess, in the news.
Because
the market's been on fire.
It has.
Despite all of the things coming out of our neighbors to the south,
yeah.
The stock market has done very well.
That's right.
Right? And so people are trying to look at, well, which stocks should I pick?
That's right. And so today we're going to talk about that. And in fact, I'm going to talk about how maybe I should call it investor picking.
Okay.
Because we're going to talk about how stocks pick investors. And you might say to me, Greg, how do stocks pick investors?
Well, let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Greg, how do stocks pick investors?
Oh, good question.
What do you mean by that?
Good question. Because most people think, oh, investors, and we're talking here mainly about, you know, retail investors, people, you know, well, people like you and me, practically, that aren't in the business. But
I'm in the business.
I know. I'm not. Well, I am, sort of, I guess. I'm on the edge of it. I used to be. Anyway, most people think, well, investors, you know, pick stocks. But for many investors, that would be wrong. And so let's explain that a little bit. So do stocks pick investors? And the answer is yes, absolutely. Because most investors don't start by looking at, you know, the range of available investment options, which includes, you know, 15,000 or more stocks worldwide. But what happens is stocks pick their investors by pulling attention toward themselves.
Yep.
And they do that in a number of ways. It can do it through price action, news, and narrative. So here's how that works. So first point is attention is the gateway to ownership. And what I mean by that is that most investors don't discover stocks through that deep financial analysis that you maybe would see with, you know, with professional analysts.
Mm-hmm.
What they do is they notice a headline, price move, a tweet, or a rumor, and then the seed gets planted. And so the stocks that demand attention naturally attract certain types of investors. And so in that sense, they actually pick who they appeal to.
Right.
And, you know, and so that's the first point. And when you think about it, how many people, you know, will come up to say, hey, I saw this article about such and such, or it was in the news, you know, the stock moved 50% yesterday. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the attention. And so one of those things is the price action. So when you see big moves up or down, that draws crowds, you know. So if something moves 30% in one day, people rush in because of FOMO. They say,
yeah.
Oh my God, you know, the stock's moving. I'm not in it. I gotta get in before it's too late. So fear of missing out.
So they're rushing in without knowing why the stock is even moving.
They just know it's moving.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And they want to get in on it. Or if it's a 20%, you know, decline, then you might get two types of investors. One type that would say, okay, well, you know, if I have it, I got to get out of it. But more importantly, you might see contrarians that rush in and say, oh my God, the stock's down 20%. What a buying opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll rush in. And so the price movement of a stock can really attract people's attention.
I think there's a third one there, actually. That would be the short sellers might come into when the stock goes down like that.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or options traders, you know, many retail investors. And when I say retail investors, I just mean individual investors,
yeah.
not professionals. You know, many of them will trade options because trading options is a lot less expensive than buying stocks or selling stocks. And so,
right.
Yeah, so absolutely a big crash in a stock price might bring in those kinds of people. You know, so there's momentum traders, there's value hunters, meme chasers. We talked about meme stocks many times, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit today as well. They get summoned by different types of price action. You know, and there's a lot of people that would never looked at stocks like Nvidia, Tesla, Palantir without some sort of massive price moves, you know. And so, in a sense, the stock is, you know, kind of saying, look, hey, look at me.
Yeah.
Look at me. I moved a lot.
Well, especially with like Tesla. I remember a couple of years ago, it was trading at some crazy multiple.
Still is. But
still is, yeah. But it was even higher,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And when you look at, okay, stocks are priced based off of their earnings, in theory, right?
Yeah.
And you looked at the sales patterns of Tesla versus Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Tesla was selling, I don't know the number, was it 1/10 of the cars of Toyota?
Yeah.
And trading at a multiple of, you know, 100 times more than Toyota.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it was all momentum, it seems.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even now, I mean, I think Tesla, I don't know the exact number, but I think it's something in the order of 170 times earnings.
Yeah.
So you've got to count on some pretty impressive growth in order to justify those kinds of price multiples.
Yeah.
Another point is that the narratives can actually shape who buys their stock. So if you talk about the artificial intelligence revolution, you know, so you might find people that are more interested in tech futurists. You know, they're tech futurists. They're, mm-hmm. you know, or they're looking for things because it appeals to them on a personal level.
Mm-hmm.
Or dividend safety. So, you know, how many times have we seen, you know, people like retirees that are looking for income? You know, they see a stock that's got an 8% dividend yield. And it's like, oh my gosh, you know, we have to have that. So if a stock has an 8% dividend yield, that might attract an investor saying, oh yeah, that's for me.
Yeah, but the problem I have with that one is that the dividend is just a form of return of capital, right?
So, absolutely.
Yeah, so it's not like, I know I ran into one the other day where somebody said, look at this stock, it's got a 13% dividend. It's like, whoa. You know, be careful.
Well, that's right. And the other thing is the dividend on a stock, you know, will go up temporarily if the price tanks.
Yeah.
Right. So if you've got a stock paying a 5% dividend and the stock price goes down by half, that dividend becomes 10%.
Until they cut the dividend.
That's right. It's not because the company, you know, suddenly brought in a lot more cash. It's just the, you know, it's just a fraction. You know, now meme hype or activist news, like, so that kind of news can attract people like day traders, you know, that trade on Reddit, Wall Street Bets, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that with GameStop and AMC a few years ago. And these days, there's more meme stocks out there like Krispy Kreme and other stocks we can talk about.
Yeah.
And then sometimes the narrative is just the story the stock tells through news coverage, which might attract a particular type of investor.
Yeah.
Another way that stocks pick investors are by behavioral targeting. So it seems like some stocks are almost designed to appeal to a certain psychological profile of the investor.
Mm-hmm.
So Tesla, which we talked about, might appeal to visionaries or highly risk-tolerant people or people that believe that Elon is, you know, is a god of some sort.
Yeah.
Or there could be brand loyalists, you know, that would be attracted to stocks like Apple, you know, quality seekers or Disney, any of those kinds of things. You know, so once attention is drawn, then the stock kind of filters out the people who don't have the right temperament to hold it. You know, and so, you know, so if somebody really is, you know, is a risk-averse type, they won't hold on to Tesla very long because there's going to be some very violent movements in the price.
Right. So question for you then on that. How do stocks pick investors via attention?
Well, they do it in a couple of ways. As we talked about already, they move in ways that demand attention. So they go up a lot in mm-hmm. one day, you know. In fact, there was a new issue, an IPO, I think it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, and it tripled. You know, it came out, I think it was priced at $30, and at one point during the day it was trading at $112.
Wow.
You know, so so things like that gets attention.
What, do you remember when Facebook went public?
Yes.
And there was so much hype around it. I don't remember the exact number. I'm just going to throw out a number. I thought it was like around maybe $24 a share or something like that was the IPO price. And maybe that's wrong. So don't quote me on that.
Yep.
But it was something.
Yeah.
And the first trade was like $41 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then immediately fell
to
like, I can't remember, $17 or something. And everybody was so upset.
Exactly. And so the only question is, why didn't we just, you know, put all of our money into Facebook at $17 or $20?
Well, because it could have gone further down.
Can see the future, if only.
Yeah.
So you know, they can, so as they say, moving in price ways, we talked about the demand notice, generating news, hype, or fear.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing will certainly get investors' attention, aligning with investor psychology and storytelling. And filtering people in or out based on their behavior and conviction. Mm-hmm. And listen, I've seen that myself, you know, even when I was in the business. You know, I just have a personal interest in biotechnology
mm-hmm.
because of my background. And so I'm attracted to those, you know, and so if there's any news or any, you know, dramatic price movement on biotechnology stock, I'll take notice.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily buy it, but it certainly attracts my attention because that's my, you know, that's my personal psychology, I guess.
Yeah. It aligns with your background.
Exactly. So, you know, the bottom line is, you know, obviously stocks don't have consciousness, you know, but their price movement, their visibility, their narrative act as a signal, calling in investors who fit them. So, so basically they're picking their investors by pulling in the right people. Mm-hmm. But most people, you know, in the end, many retail investors and maybe most make mistakes when they're trying to pick stocks, you know. Mm-hmm. So this is just one part of it is, you know, how they pick them.
Yeah.
But especially early on, you know, so stock picking is really difficult, you know. And as we know, even for professionals, you know, it's very difficult to beat the market.
I think it's a fool's game, personally. Yep. You know, you and I have been in so many presentations over the years from various fund managers or individual companies, and my experience has been that it just doesn't work.
No.
You know, and when it does work, somebody might have just got lucky.
That's right.
And then they mistake that luck for skill.
Exactly.
And then it's hard to replicate that luck again.
Yeah, exactly.
Repeatedly.
And so for many people, you know, and this, I remember going back to the early days, I was at a conference in 2001, mm-hmm. if you can believe that, so 24 years ago, and there was a fellow named Terence O'Dean, and he became one of the gurus of behavioral economics.
Okay.
He studied with Daniel Kahneman and those kinds of things. And I remember, those were the glory days of discount brokerages. The discount brokerages started up in the late 90s, and of course, mm-hmm. in 2001, you know, we had been through just going through the dot-com bust. And I remember, and he was one of the first people, actually, that I heard say, you know, people would call him up because they knew he was, like, in the investing, mm-hmm. you know, side of academics, you know, and talk about, you know, the stocks that they were buying. And he was the first one that said, you know, that I heard say, well, how did that stock pick you?
Yeah.
But his whole point was that for people trying to do it on their own, he hoped that their first experiences would be bad ones, mm-hmm. that they would lose money right away because they would be less inclined to make exactly the mistake you talked about, is thinking mm-hmm. that it was their skill mm-hmm. and keep doing it and essentially investing or betting larger and larger amounts of money.
I heard an advertisement on the radio yesterday, and it was a U.S. company. I don't remember what their name was. It was an AI-driven stock trading platform.
Yep.
That linked to your discount brokerage
mm-hmm.
and would front you $300,000
nice.
To trade with no experience.
Yeah.
What can go wrong there?
Exactly. Exactly. Sounds like a recipe for success to me.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the more common mistakes that that investors make when picking stocks.
Sure.
So the first one, which we've seen a lot, is just chasing past performance.
Yeah.
You know, because many people buy stocks just because they've recently gone up. And, you know, and that, you know, and so you could call that trying to catch the momentum, mm-hmm. you know, while things are still going up. The problem is that, you know, stocks often revert or cool after some big moves, and buying high basically sets you up for buying high and selling low, which is not a good recipe for successful investing.
I think this goes beyond stock picking too, though, because if you chase performance of fund managers,
sure,
it's the same thing, right? There's mean reversion.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another problem is overtrading. You know, so if you're constantly buying and selling based on news tips or short-term price movements, then, you know, first of all, you're going to be paying maybe high fees. Mm-hmm. You might be paying taxes if you've made any money, or you might just be selling low and moving into something else and buying high, selling low until you're eventually out of money.
Can I talk about fees for a second, Greg?
Please do.
I had somebody recently reach out to me, and they wanted to sell out of their model fixed income portfolio, and they wanted to go trade that money in ETFs on their own.
Right.
In fixed income.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them why. Like, look, if that's what somebody wants to do, great. Right?
Sure.
And this goes to the fees discussion, because they said, well, we just don't want to pay high of fees as we're paying.
For sure.
So then I did this analysis through Y charts, and I just looked at the three ETFs they were looking at buying and compared it to the model fixed income portfolio that we mm-hmm. manage.
Yeah.
And our portfolio grossly outperformed these three ETFs.
Yeah.
Almost double.
Yeah.
Right? And so you start to question, okay, great, you're gonna go save 40 basis points in fees, but you're gonna underperform by 200 basis points. So
yeah, exactly.
What are you accomplishing?
Yeah.
Right?
No, that's right. Yeah, exactly. And listen, I mean, some of those, you'll only know in hindsight how much you've given up.
Yeah.
You know, when you see the actual numbers, but if you have the proper strategy looking forward, mm-hmm. then you're putting yourself in the best position.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, and this is a subject for another conversation, but certainly when you're talking about bonds, mm-hmm. you know, as we've talked a lot about ETFs, you know, or just indexes as a relatively not bad way to get broad diversification at a low cost.
Yep.
And we've also talked about how most fund managers, active fund managers, particularly in stock funds, don't beat those benchmarks or those yeah. or those indexes. Same not true in bonds.
Yeah.
You know, and so so aside from the issue of costs and things, it's like you need to make sure it's the right strategy.
Yeah.
Because the strategy of bond ETFs is not the same strategy as stock ETFs.
Yeah.
They're very, very different animals.
Very different, yeah.
Okay, so another mistake that, another common mistake that many investors make, and I believe this is the most important mistake, mm-hmm. is lack of diversification. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you bet heavily on a few stocks or a single sector, that can absolutely increase the risk, you know, and we've talked about that endlessly, you know, mm-hmm. living in Calgary where, at least in the old days, you know, energy stocks, many people were heavily, heavily over-concentrated in energy stocks.
Well, I mean, you know, unfortunately in Calgary, because it is so resource-based,
yeah.
many people believe they're diversified when they hold not just oil stocks, but gas stocks too, you know.
So. Well, that's right. And many people work in the oil and gas industry and so yeah. believe they have inside information,
yeah.
you know, that will benefit them in the long run.
Yeah.
And sometimes it will, but probably over the long run you will likely underperform mm-hmm. the market. Yeah, and so the problem there just is that increased risk of large losses from a bad pick or a bad sector.
Yeah.
Another mistake is just not understanding the business. You know, so when you buy into a stock because or the stock has picked you because of news or you're buying it just because of price action, you don't really understand what the business is, then you may not understand why the stock went up.
Yeah.
And therefore, you might panic when the stock goes down because you don't actually understand, oh, well, this kind of stock is prone to lots of volatility and has lots of down months as well as up months.
Yeah.
So not understanding what you own basically is a big mistake. One we've talked about a lot, timing the market.
You mentioned diversification is your big one.
Yeah.
I think market timing is my big one. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, well, and in fact, I think I agree with that as well. I mean,
yeah.
you know, I think if you look at, you know, investor portfolios, individual investors, diversification may be a big problem. Mm-hmm. But as you say, timing the market, I believe we once did a podcast where we identified that all investor questions are around market timing.
Yeah, they're just reframed.
They're almost all market timing questions. Yeah. Is now a good time to buy gold? Is now a good time to buy stocks? Should we be getting out of the market right now because of tariffs or whatever? Should we, you know, you're right. They are all market timing questions.
Yeah. But you're also right, Greg, because you know, you have to be diversified either way.
Either way. That's right. Yeah.
So good. Kudos to you, Greg.
Well, to both, we're both right. Okay. This is going to age me. There was a commercial for a mint. There used to be these mints sold that were called certs.
Certs? I remember certs.
Can't find them anymore.
Yeah, well, because they're highly toxic. They're made out of Teflon.
Probably, but and the commercial was certs is a candy mint. Certs is a breath mint. Stop, you two. You're both right. Oh. So there we go. Wow, does that age me? All right. Okay. Another mistake that investors might make is just totally ignoring valuations.
Yeah.
Okay. So
Tesla.
Well, Tesla is a great example. You know, I mean, so you're buying a company that's trading at 170 times earnings, let's say. Mm-hmm. And listen, that might be great if their earnings are doubling every year, mm-hmm. you know, because then next year it would only be trading at 85 times earnings. And then the year after that, it might be trading at only 40 times earnings. So it could be a fantastic buy. But what does Tesla have to do? I mean, I think, and I don't follow earnings reports overly closely, but when they attract my attention, I pay attention.
Yeah.
And I believe Tesla's earnings have actually been declining.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a bad year for Tesla and there's lots of growth, you know, if there's a growth story there, if they're talking about robotaxis and things, but you can't ignore the fact that it's trading at 170 times earnings. And I believe the old legacy car makers like GM and Ford are trading at 5 to 8 times earnings.
Right.
So I'm not saying you should be buying either of those or Tesla. It's just, you know, if you ignore it, then you might get caught.
Yeah.
And so
you're just caught up in the story at that point.
That's right. You know, and so, you know, the higher the price that you're paying on a, you know, on a PE basis or whatever other ratio you want to look at, the forward expected returns are probably going to be lower.
I'm going to go out on a limb here on something related to Tesla, and I might alienate myself with some listeners.
Okay.
The Tesla Cybertrucks are probably the ugliest vehicle I've ever seen in my life.
And thank goodness, you know, there's so few of them on the road, you don't have to look at them very often.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, and if anybody has a Cybertruck, you know, feel free to, you know, write in and talk about it.
Yeah.
Okay, another mistake is following the crowd. So that's that whole kind of jumping into meme stocks or social media stocks that we've talked about. You know, the fact that, you know, stocks like GameStop or AMC a few years ago, you know, went to ridiculous prices when, you know, the fundamentals of the companies did not justify them at all.
Well, especially because the people trading it didn't understand what was happening.
That's right.
There was a short squeeze happening on GameStop.
Yep.
And it makes sense to short GameStop in a world where brick and mortar stores are going away and their business model is to be in strip malls selling video game equipment.
Well, right? And it kind of shows the dichotomy between professional investors who might be looking at the fundamentals of a company and saying, you know what, to your point, you know, this is not a company with a bright future.
Yeah.
You know, brick and mortar stores and just the fundamentals of the business, you know, which convince those investors that they should actually short the stock, which means they're betting that the share price will go down over time. The reason the whole, you know, jump in, you know, the shares from whatever they were trading at, I don't know, $9 or $8 or something up to
$400. Yeah.
That wasn't a fundamental move. That was a technical move, you know, and a psychological move driven by, you know, by speculation. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So you find that herd behavior, you know, can move a stock for a while, but those often end in bubbles or sharp crashes and things like that.
Yeah.
Another mistake, emotional investing, you know, so just letting fear, greed, or boredom dictate your decisions, you know, so you've held on to a stock for a long time. It hasn't done anything. So let's get rid of it and try something else.
Yeah.
You know, or panic selling because, you know, the stock went down a lot in one day or whatever, or worse yet. And this is one of the ones we've talked about with behavioral economics is just holding on to losers too long.
Yeah.
You know, how many times you've heard, the stock's down from where I bought it. So as soon as I break even, I'll sell it and then we'll buy something else.
That doesn't happen. As soon as it breaks even, you're going to keep holding it.
It's on a move. It's on a roll.
Until it goes up. And then it's like, well, it went up. I can't sell it now.
That's right. You know, and listen, it's, you know, most people don't, you know, don't like to trigger a loss.
Yeah.
You know, but what I always tried to do is say, okay, well, look, what's the best use of my money today? You know, if I had $5,000, let's say the value of the stock holding, would I buy this particular stock or would I buy something else? Because that's all, the stock doesn't know what you paid for it. It's just trading at whatever value or price, you know, the market believes is right.
Yeah.
So, so holding on, you know, making those kind of emotional decisions to either buy or hold or sell, you know, it can be a big mistake. Ignoring taxes, you know, so if you don't understand or pay attention to capital gains taxes on short-term trades or even things you've held for a long time, you know, you can often, you know, maybe do well on the stock trade, but trigger taxes that erode your gain.
Yeah.
You know, and so
I think taxes is so underplayed in our world.
Yeah.
Like when that capital gains inclusion rate was supposed to be changed in Canada last year.
Yep.
The last year?
Yeah. Yeah, last year.
And then they walked it back. But before they walked it back, like a ton of people had triggered big capital gains to avoid the new inclusion rate. That caused real damage.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure. For sure it did.
Or did it? Because it generated a lot of money for the government.
Well, that's right. But there are certainly a lot of people that made big decisions, particularly around their corporations or things like that, to trigger taxes, you know, at the supposedly lower tax rate, lower than what the new rate was going to be.
Yeah.
And all they've done is they've moved forward the payment of taxes. So by not deferring taxes longer, that it's cost them money, like in real dollars.
Right.
You know, so for sure. And, you know, and the other thing is a lot of people believe that, you know, active stock trading, oh, this is great. You know, we made some money. You know, we sold out. Now we're just going to sit on the sidelines until things are better. Well, in the end, you've triggered taxes. You've paid taxes out of pocket. And you might end up getting back into the same thing later on, whether it's at a lower price or a higher price. I mean, if it's a higher price, you've lost. And if it's a lower price, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Because had you not sold the position in the first place, you'd still be holding it. And you'd have the tax money that you have since spent.
Yeah.
It would still be in your pocket.
So again, this is a market timing question.
Yeah, exactly. Do I sell now? And the last mistake, and possibly a very big one in the long term, is just not having a clear plan or strategy. Mm-hmm. So if, and this is, this is an evolution. We've talked about this when we've talked about the evolution of our business over time, over the last 30 years. You know, in the olden days, it was just, I just want to make money. Mm-hmm. I just want to, do as well as I can. I'll buy a stock because I think it'll go up, better than something else. Mm-hmm. But if you invest without having any goals or time horizon or risk tolerance in mind, you're going to make decisions that don't work out well. You'll either be making inconsistent decisions or you'll get poor long-term performance because you're not really tracking your achievements or your results against any particular goals. So basically, to sum up, some investors, many investors who are trying to do it themselves, they end up underperforming the market because they make behavioral or strategic errors while they're, in the process.
Now, full disclosure to our listeners, we are not stock pickers.
No.
We were stock pickers
back
in the day. Mm-hmm. And stock picking was fun.
Sure.
But super volatile.
And you know what? And I'm glad you brought that up because this is a good way to close. Stock picking is fun. For many of our clients when I was, dealing directly with clients, they would have a particular interest. But it didn't overwhelm their portfolio.
Yeah.
As I mentioned, I have a particular interest in biotechnology or genomics, gene editing stocks and things like that. So I will always be reading up on that stuff because I find it interesting. And if there's a company that I think, that one might have some potential, I might put a little money into it. But it will not interfere with my long-term strategy.
Yeah.
And my progress towards whatever my financial goals, are. But, we've talked about this before. If somebody, has a real interest because of their psychology or their personal interests and they want to own some AI stocks or they want to own biotech or other technology names, why not?
Yeah.
But just don't let it overwhelm your portfolio. If you have under 5% of your portfolio in something that we can call an alternative investment, not in the classic sense, but just alternative to like a well-thought-out diversified portfolio, then there's nothing wrong with it.
Well,
but don't think that that's going to be where you're not going to get rich, likely, by doing that.
Yeah.
Very few, other than some of the mega bazillionaires out there got rich by trading stocks. Mm-hmm. And people might say, what about Elon Musk? Well, Elon Musk created stuff.
Yeah.
He created a lot of stuff, and no matter what you think of him, he's come up with some pretty visionary type things, with SpaceX and Tesla and that kind of thing. So he didn't make his money by trading stocks. He made his money by building businesses.
Right.
And so most of us aren't going to get rich trading stocks.
Well, I think the numbers are, they're big. They're bigly. They're amazingly bigly against building wealth from stock trading.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, as you mentioned, and I mentioned this to a woman I went to school with, she and I were talking about creating wealth.
Yep.
And she has her portfolio with us. And I said, you create wealth by building businesses.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily create wealth by trading stocks.
Right.
You protect wealth by being invested.
Yeah.
But you don't really create it.
Well, that's right. And you're investing in businesses.
Yeah.
Warren Buffett, made his money by investing in businesses, and in many cases he would, take almost an activist role. He would, but he didn't run the businesses himself.
Yeah.
He just found businesses that he believed were, met his fundamental requirements for investment and he held on to them forever.
Yeah.
So I think the strategy for everybody should be find good businesses. And when I say that, I don't mean you go find it. I mean, find a fund, mm-hmm. Where they're investing based on a certain set of principles and strategies and let them do the hard work.
Yeah. So let me end it off here. As I mentioned, stock trading is fun, But playing roulette is also fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
I would never put all of my wealth on Red 32.
That's right. You know, and that's why, listen, that's why Las Vegas, you know, is a fun place to go, mm-hmm. you know. But hopefully nobody believes that when they pull that, you know, the arm on the slot machine, that if they hit a jackpot, it's because of their skill.
Yeah. All right.
Good.
Is that it?
That's it for today.
Okay. Till next time.
You bet.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, an exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.